Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerdy stuff way too much. Today, our special guest is Chris 3C himself. Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, doing good. Thank you for having me back on, Sean. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and Griffin. So I'm excited to see what we talk about today.
And joining us, as always, is Griffin.
Yeah, we were just talking about this. All right, hey, guys, we were just talking this before we started, but like every time I'm on here, I apparently am wearing some like skimpy little tank top. So like, listen, I do this for you all. It's only for you all. So I hope you enjoy it. Yeah.
The night before, I always remind him, hey, be sure to put on one of those sexy tank tops to attract the fans and get some eye candy going on, especially while I got the crazy man beard scaring people off.
Exactly.
We've got to see a little bit of the shoulders there from you. So
yeah, see it, get it a little bit right there. There we go. All right. Hey, this is an authentic Gold's Gym tank top, by the way. I just want everyone to know I'm not a poser.
Very nice. Very nice. Did I just lock up?
No, you're good. You're good.
Oh, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I lost both of you for a little bit there. This is going to be an interesting live stream.
Welcome to live chat.
I'm already locking up. Whew. Yeah, I have a brand new computer, and so my computer has all the processing power to do all the stuff I've been struggling with the whole time we've been doing these, but now, you know, my internet is still unbelievably terrible. But we got a ton of stuff to cover today. Jason Blum is going to start shooting a movie on the Universal backlot, Atlantis live-action remake, Furiosa update, bunch of other stuff, some more casting information about The Mandalorian Season 2, and Scoob came out, so I wanted to talk about some different perspectives on Scoob and what everybody thought about it, because it seems like people they're falling in very different places on this one as to whether they loved and hated it, thought it was a betrayal. So I thought that between the three of us and the chat, we could get a nice discussion about that one. But if you're listening to the audio version of this, be sure to leave a rating on wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave a review down below to try to get some of that momentum early on with this podcast. Actually, I can't say early on anymore because now we're 15 episodes in, but keep that momentum going. It's greatly appreciated. And with that said, let's go ahead and get started with our first piece of news of today. This one dropped literally about 2 hours ago, that Jason Blum of Blumhouse Productions is working to make a movie that's low budget on the Universal Studios backlot. So we're obviously can't leave our houses locked down. Nothing's open. Mm-hmm. California being one of the ones that's more shut down because it is a more densely populated state. So they're looking to find a way to get back into production on something. And with that, they are looking to shoot this movie small budget on the back lot. So what I read said $6.5 million budget. It's Blumhouse. All of theirs are pretty small little productions. 3C, what do you think about this one?
I think, of course, they would be the studio to do it because that's just been their model from the beginning. And I think a lot of other studios should start adopting this. And now in the times of what's happening in our situation, they're going to be forced to. I saw in that article that they were explaining that they're kind of going to be the guinea pigs because we still don't know how long this is going to go on for. And of course, some things are getting back to normal, especially with you and me being in Texas. We've seen restaurants open. We were able to go get haircuts and whatnot. But the rest of the world is
You got a haircut. I haven't gotten a haircut yet.
Okay.
Friday.
Yeah, sorry.
Friday, I'm getting my haircut.
Okay.
And the beard's leaving. People keep asking about the beard.
Oh, Friday. Really?
Haircut, beard. Yeah. Doing a big transformation. Sorry, cut you off.
No, you're fine.
Haircuts.
Yeah, me too, man. I wanted one so bad. But either way, so it's going to really be interesting to see how other studios take what they did. I mean, they have the whole lot to themselves. They detailed where each cast member was going to be in hotels and whatnot. And I just wonder also, because they made it sound like it's going to be like a haunted movie about just an abandoned lot. What a perfect time to do that, because I bet that lot's always crazy with other movies going on. So I'm excited to see what they do.
How about you, Griffin?
Yeah, I think it offers a great chance for them to just get creative and do something simple and fun. And of course, like, it's going to be under like the Blumhouse sort of thing. Like, that's their MO, like Chris was sort of saying. So like, you know, I'm sure maybe other studios will kind of adopt this mentality and maybe start slowly doing stuff like this. But I mean, listen, they're still making a film, so it's like they're still going to need a lot of people there. So I'm really kind of curious as to how it's all going to go down, especially during, you know, this whole thing that we're living in right now. I mean, I understand California is slowly easing up on you know restrictions and whatnot, but the stay-at-home order is in place here until July. So I don't know when exactly they're going to start shooting it, or if they can, like, you know, I don't know, figure out a way to do this. But I'm just expecting simple, creative, hopefully it's effective, and they just get some, you know, people and do something fun. I'm not expecting any, like, big names either to really be attached to it. I just think it's going to be a nice little indie horror or thriller film.
And so if anyone doesn't understand when we say the Universal backlot, Universal Studios is both a theme park as well as their studios. And so there's just sound stages and like a whole downtown area. The like, I did the tour there back in October when I visited California, and you just drive right by downtown from Back to the Future. You can see the clock tower right there. They filmed it on the back lot, and tons of movies have been shot there. So it's an isolated location. Blumhouse, they do small productions. That's their thing. Make them cheap, high concept, easy to market. You make $50 million on it, and that's a profitable film. And so this seems like the perfect opportunity to test the waters with safety and kind of get the ball rolling a little bit. They are exactly the right studio to be the guinea pig for something like this. Mm-hmm. So to me, it just makes a ton of sense that they would be the one to do this. Next one on here, we got a first trailer for the new Spike Lee movie. It's going to be a Netflix original called Five Bloods. The trailer, I guess it looks like it's taking place during two timelines, with a group of Vietnam soldiers during Vietnam and then several years after Vietnam going to kind of hunt down some, I guess, buried gold that they left there. Mm-hmm, and so it looks like a blend of war movie, hunting movie, or hunting for treasure movie, and then, of course, Spike Lee. So no shortage of political commentary. Did you get to catch the trailer?
Yes, I did. I really dug the trailer. I think us who watch movies, like hundreds of them a month or whatever, we really dig the style because it's different. It's not that's not your typical trailer right there.
Right.
I am curious to see how general audiences will take it, whether they think, is this like some sort of documentary? Oh, wait, but that's the guy who played Black Panther. What's going on here? I still really dig the style and what they're going for. Along with that, I wonder if this would have even been a film that performed well in theater. So I think Netflix is the perfect spot for it. The story really intrigues me. A bunch of older soldier dogs going back to, I guess, unbury some treasure and reminiscing about their friend who was in the army that probably got killed off. But I'm happy with the trailer.
Griffin, how about you?
I mean, you had me at Spike Lee and Vietnam movie like that. That's a combo I've been waiting to hear for so long. And like, coming hot off of Black Klansman, which I think is actually, other than Do the Right Thing, it might be my favorite film of his. And it well deserving of a best original screenplay, or maybe it was adapted, best screenplay win at the Oscars. I think this is an amazing way to follow it up. Super stylized. You know, he's going to utilize stock footage, mix it with, you know, actual on location footage. They actually shot a lot of this film, I believe, on location. So that, like, makes me even more excited for it. I love how they're going to, it'll probably be something where it's like they show, they flash back to them during the war, but then they're also going to reflect about, like, what was going on at that time, you know, how minorities or African-Americans were treated as soldiers during that time and some of the injustices there. And so, like, you can definitely expect Spike to explore and exploit a lot of that stuff, which is what I think we all are hoping to get when we get a Spike Lee movie. But what I was not expecting was the amount of action in this trailer. The action looks phenomenal. And I haven't really seen Spike do a lot of action. I think probably the most I've seen of his was again in Black Klansman. And so it's like he's almost like taking it to another level here, and it's super stylized, looks super authentic to the time period. It's got an excellent cast. And so I am all in. This trailer got me extremely excited, and I think it's going to be a major awards contender this year.
And I mean, I think with Spike Lee, inherently with him, divisive by nature, intentionally, you know, trying to poke the hornet's nest, have something to say that it'll make his fans high five each other, and it'll make the other, it trolls the other side. And so I'm always a little bit like, okay, what type of Spike Lee movie are we going to get? And so when you sent me the link to it, and I was like, okay, what is this one going to be? And instantly, even if you're not on board with all of his politics, it just looks like it's going to be a fun, exciting movie.
Yeah.
And yeah. that has something to say. I don't mind when a movie has something to say, as long as you do it with a story. And this movie looks like it has this engaging, interesting story that's about an incredibly divisive, polarized time in our history, where there's plenty there to make commentary in an appropriate manner. So it looks like primed for Spike Lee to make a movie that general audiences can enjoy, have fun with, as well as to people that wouldn't normally check out a Spike Lee movie. He can present his ideas and his thoughts. And so I dug the trailer a lot more than I was expecting to. And I was like, Spike Lee movie. Okay. Let's see where this goes. I was like, man, this just looks like a movie that I'm going to really enjoy.
Yeah. Also, just quickly, a little bit of a side here, but something did just drop.
Thank you. Please say what I think it is.
It's not a big surprise, not a big shocker, but David Arquette is joining the cast of Scream 5. So we can expect that, I guess, a lot of the other returning cast members will be in here as well. Neve Campbell was kind of like talking about the fact that she was in conversations last week. But I think with David Arquette joining, I think this will probably solidify her soon.
Yes. All right. That's very interesting. Thank you guys for catching that, since I'm not checking the news on this one. But,
that's been mentioned in the chat, and I just wanted to double check and make sure it was accurate. So I was like, okay, is that true?
But that's been the question, is it a reboot? Is it a remake? What exactly, when you say Scream 5, is it really Scream 5? And so then there was rumors, Neve Campbell was in discussions. I mean, I think this locks it in, obviously, that we are getting a continuation. So I guess that's the question of, is that the direction we think is best for this one? 3C, what's your take on Scream 5 and David Arquette?
I think it's a little bit of both. So in no way, shape, or form, willing to bet my channel's life on it. They're not calling this Scream 5. They're not going to market it as the fifth Scream film, especially with the fourth film actually bombing for them in theaters. This will be probably just called Scream and take the route of Halloween 2018, where they want to bring back the legacy characters like David Arquette, Neve Campbell, and now that they've confirmed one of them, the rest are sure to come, but I think they're setting it up for a new generation, handing off the torch, so to speak. So if they really do focus it on just the main characters and have Neve Campbell the star again, I will be shocked. I'll love it as a fan, but I don't see the marketing appeal in that.
Did Sean freeze? Sean may have freeze, folks.
We'll keep, so, we'll keep.
Yeah, I'll just quickly talk about the stuff for Scream 5. Again, like I've always kind of assumed that they were going to try and bring in the returning cast members for this film and integrate them in one way, shape, or form. You know, it'd be, honestly, and I would not be surprised if they did this. It could be really interesting if they sort of like play it on like the Scream-isms, and a lot of the cast members that are returning aren't really in the movie, but they're in like a movie within a movie, or I don't know, they're like disguised as someone, or they're like, they kill off, like, I don't know, David Arquette or Neve Campbell within the first 5 minutes of the film. Would be very controversial, but also you want to reboot the series and move away from the legacy of the past four movies, that could be a perfect like Scream way to do that.
Yeah, like a new nightmare version of Scream. Like
exactly. And when you pair that with the fact that Radio Silence is doing it, and they want to do it as like a loving tribute to Wes Craven himself, I think that we'll get something interesting that is, it's a great tribute, but it also is like, it also feels like Scream. The question becomes, the big question with Scream 5 is like, what are the horror tropes of today that this film is going to look to exploit, you know?
Yeah, that is true. Sean, do we got you back?
Are you back, Sean?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, trying to get my wife to come up and fill with some things, Steve. Maybe we can make this work a little bit better. That's been the question for me, is just how are they going to make it relevant to today's horror movie?
Yeah,
the way that Scream back in the mid 90s was commentary on the previous 15 years of slasher films. What are they going to do to make a commentary on the last 15 years of horror films? And if they can't do that, then I'm not quite sure what we're doing with this movie. And I don't think it'll work again. I think that's one of the flaws of Scream 4, is that it didn't have enough to say. And so hopefully we can get something interesting with that. All right. Am I come back?
Yes.
You're good. Very smooth.
Yeah.
Okay, good. It's the internet. It's the worst. So I'm hopefully I have a backup option on it. We did have a super chat come in from Azim. The Dream Reviews said, do you guys think some franchises should transition to TV series similar to Cobra Kai? Or do you think shows and TV series should get overlooked and forgotten? I mean, I don't think it's a one size fits all answer to it. Cobra Kai was the right thing to do with that franchise to like, it was such an experimental type thing to like, let's come back with a different tone, but at the same time, take the emotional theme seriously of it. I think all of that worked for that show, but that doesn't work for everything. So I think it's always a matter of the specific show and what fits that, what it's trying to do. And certain ones need bigger stories, some need smaller stories. So I think they should just be open to kind of all the options on the table to see what they can do. But I don't think Cobra Kai is repeatable. It's not, Cobra Kai kind of worked, so let's try that with something else. I think that that is like such a niche show that's so interesting and quirky and weird that it worked. But, you know, it all depends. 3C, did you have any take on this one?
Yeah, so I'm kind of confused by his last part where he's like, do you think shows and TV series overlooked and forgotten? I highly doubt it, because if anything, we're living in the age where TV shows are looked on the same scale as movies, you know, if not even more. Some say we're living in the golden age of TV series, but I really just think it's because we have so much content to consume that's out there. It all depends on the medium. I think we're going to talk about a TV show coming up, the John Wick spinoff series. So it's all the way you handle it. Some stuff that I thought would be amazing and would last a long time, like the Purge TV series. Like, I thought that was pretty cool, interesting idea to tackle that. And that show just got canceled. And we have the Chucky TV series coming up. We'll see how that plays out, especially since it's like the Chucky from the 80s is still continuing on canon with all his movies. Like, how does something like that work? HBO working on the Pinhead series. Just there's things out there that could really push it forward, but I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, it is sort of like a case by case basis, because a show that I think, I mean, no one watched it, but I thought it was actually really, really good was Treadstone. And that was a spinoff off of like the Jason Bourne films, talking about like other sleeper agents that were part of the program. It reminded me a little bit of like Heroes meets I'm trying to think of what else, but it had like really intense, or a little bit of 24 in there, but it like had really intense action, great characters and great character development. Just no one cared about it. No one cared to watch it. And so I agree. It is a case by case basis in that regard. And so like, I don't know, like a story we're going to be talking about a little bit later on, The Continental, that has potential to be an amazing spinoff off of John Wick. I think the series that spinoff off of film franchises, the ones that succeed the most are the ones that take like a concept or like a character that's really unexplored but has a lot of potential to be interesting, and they kind of make it their own. It's if you just take like a movie, for instance, and then you just kind of like take the really obvious parts of it and throw it into a series, it's not going to be great. Obviously, there are cases of where it has been great. I mean, you could look at the Watchmen series, for example, which it's not exactly like a one for one there, but it is like adapting, you know, a famous graphic novel, which was also a movie and so forth. And so like it's doing its own take on that original source material. And as to the second part of it, where it's like, do you think shows and TV series get overlooked and forgotten? Absolutely not. Exactly what Chris was saying. If anything, they're more popular right now than film because of streaming services and whatnot. So I don't know. I think it's possible. It all just depends on what the property is, what it is they're trying to spin off, and if there is potential in that idea. And Sean has lagged out. So, we can keep talking about this, or we can try.
That leaves you second in command, Griff. I don't know
if it does leave me second in command. I know. It's okay. We'll still try and get through this. So I think there were a few super chats in there that we're going to get to, guys. Unfortunately, I don't have the controls to be able to show them on the screen, but I will answer the two super chat questions that that we have in here. So Salvador Guzman says, hey, Sean, I knew you were watching Community a few weeks ago, and I was wondering if you were going to rank the seasons. I'm actually not sure if Sean has ranked the seasons of Community. He might not have, but if he hasn't, I think it was something that he was thinking about doing, if I recall. But I don't have an exact answer for you on that one. But Chris, have you seen all the seasons of Community?
Actually, I started watching it for the first time last week. I'm like midway into season three. I don't know why I didn't get into it. I guess by the time I heard about the show, I heard all the drama with Chevy Chase, and I was just like, do I really want to? Can I separate the reality of this horrible person just being funny in the show? But I gave into it, and the show's a lot of fun. So if Sean's planning to rank those characters, I have opinions on who should go where, and I have my favorites.
There you go.
So the answer to the question is very likely. I've halfway through season four and I've written notes. So it is something that I'm absolutely working on and I hope to make a video out of. So that's the short answer to it, that it'd probably be mid or late July by the time it would happen if at the earliest, but it's 100% on my mind. So we fiddle around with the internet. Obviously, you lost me for a little bit. Hopefully I'll stay with you guys. Let's try and move along to some of our other subjects on here. Atlantis, the Lost Empire. Last week, it was reported that they are in the early phases of working on a live action remake of Atlantis, the Disney animated film from about... 19 years ago? If you guys didn't notice, if you're watching the live version right now, my son crawled in the background.
So
because he was barely 2 feet crawled by in the background.
I was like, was that a fox? Like, what?
So I'll leave it on this view for a little bit just to see if we can see him sneak by once again. But if you're listening to the audio version, that's why we all just broke out laughing there. Here on the podcast, Griffin and I have been talking about how that one is prime for if there's a Disney movie that just feels like it could make for a great live action film. It's not the safe bet, but that's one that makes sense. Therese, what did you think about this one as early discussions of it happening?
Yeah, I agree with you guys that this would be a prime one to do live action for a couple of reasons. One, this is one that it did not get the appreciation it deserved once it came out. It failed. A lot of people, I guess, found it kind of odd. Over time, people renting it at Blockbuster, finding DVDs in their home, have gotten a strong admiration for the property. And along with that, when you have something that people just are not that attached to, it gives you all the freedom to do something slightly different, adjust it to what needs to be done. If you look at Iron Man and Captain America, how they weren't all that mainstream when they started out with their first films, and they took liberties with making those characters. And now that's kind of the setting stone of who they are. I think this is a great idea. So I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Yeah.
Now that it's a little bit more, not official, but now that it's a little bit more official, Griffin, what do you think about this?
Yeah, no, I love this. We don't know 100% whether this is certain. None of the trades have reported it, so we do have to take that into account. But if this is actually true and this is actually happening, hell yes. Thank you, please. This is like the one. I say this every time. There are three Disney live action remakes that can get me excited. Atlantis, Treasure Planet, and The Hunchback of Notre Dame. This is one of those three, and this is the one out of those three that I think could be the biggest hit. Not only because there's so much potential for like world building, great action and adventure, but I really like the story. I think there's an interesting commentary that can be made on colonialism and stuff like that. But the great thing about this is that they can take Atlantis in so many different directions. They can make it a direct translation, or they can take a little bit more creative liberties with it. I'm there and in terms of like who I would want to like, direct a project like this. I mean, I've always, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but like Joe Johnston, someone who like hasn't like been given the opportunity to do like a truly big, great action adventure franchise. I mean, you know, he did The Rocketeer. It kind of was I mean, it's a cult classic now, but when it came out, it kind of flopped. But someone else who I've been thinking about recently who would be amazing, especially for the visuals, because I think with Atlantis, the visual component is massive. Yes. I think someone like a Joseph Kaczynski, who did Tron Legacy, Oblivion, he's doing Top Gun Maverick, someone who's like, he's already worked with Disney a little bit, but he's got like an amazing visual like sense. He'd be amazing for it. So those two guys would be my picks to direct the project. But listen, I don't care who does it. James Cameron could like, you know, retire from Avatar World and hop on to do it, and that would be even more amazing. But like,
I mean, that's what the movie feels. I mean, it feels like a little bit Avatar, a little bit of Stargate, but it's kind of its own thing. There's a journey to it. There's a ton of world building, relic hunting, big epic battles, royalty type stuff. Yeah. I mean, it has all the stuff that you really want from one of these $150, $200 million blockbusters. A name I'll throw out there, Andrew Stanton did a ton of Pixar, of course, but then John Carter, a movie that didn't make the money that they wanted, but absolutely showed that he can handle a movie like this live action. And it's time, you know, time for him to get his chance to do one that, that actually succeeds. So, you know, as we've said many times before, that this just feels like a really good property. It's not the safe bet. You do The Lion King, Aladdin, Little Mermaid, almost certainly, Beauty and the Beast. Those were printing money. This one's not printing money. It's a gamble. It could, things could go wrong, whether it's good or bad, but that you make something really interesting that's worth being made. And I think that's the key thing to it.
Listen, as long as they bring back James Newton Howard to do the score again, that's all I care about. That's one of the best like Disney animated scores ever. It's so good.
So I had a chat come in for Taylor Nader. Thank you so much for that. Or super chat come in. This is a question for all of you. If you're only allowed to watch one horror film franchise for the rest of your life, which one and why? I've said it many times before. Scream is my favorite horror franchise. Mm-hmm. That's the one that came out when I was in high school. That was my formative years where I like actually started going to the theater to watch horror movies. And so I think I saw like 2 and 3 in the theater. I didn't see the first one. I don't believe in the theater. So that Kevin Williams sense of humor, that's the one that I would pick. 3C, how about you?
I would love to pick Scream, but just out of the number of sequels made and the fact that we're possibly getting something new, Nightmare on Elm Street with the estate now referring back to the owners of the West Craven estate and their work. They're taking pitches for something new. That'd be the one I'd be looking forward to, because when it does come back, you know they're going to at least make 3 of them.
Griffin, how about you?
Again, not super original. Sean, you and I are kind of on the same page with this, but Scream. I love those movies. I just want to take a second and say I love that we all chose Wes Craven properties. It just shows the genius of him as a filmmaker.
Good. I almost felt alienated. Thank you, Griffin.
Yeah.
Just a real quick super chat. Majestic Demon said, "Hey, Sean, you and your beard are looking beautiful. I wouldn't get too attached. I think it's leaving Friday. I think it's going to go bye-bye. Work on my tan and out in the sun to level it out so I don't get this harsh line right here." And
it'll just be fun to like,
I might just a whole, and I'll do like a transformation, all sorts of weird, like the old West beard and mustache, go for the whole spectrum of fun hairstyles. I always love to do things. I love transformation, so I don't like to stick to anything too long. So I intentionally like, let me look as ridiculous as I can. And then, boom, let's do a sudden change. And I, you know, clean shaven. I only do that once or twice per year. My wife gets mad at me, so I'm going to clean shave this, get a haircut, the whole deal, and look wildly different. All right, moving along on our subjects for today. We got some information. The tentatively titled project called Project Hail Mary. It's based off a book from Andy Weir, who was the guy that wrote the book The Martian. It's the new Ryan Gosling astronaut project, and Lord and Miller have signed on as the directors. The book hasn't come out yet. Comes out next spring, but I guess they're like, we love whatever this thing is. And so very early on, they've got a film in the works. Ryan Gosling apparently wants to go back into space. I'll throw this right over to you, Griffin, since I know you have your thoughts on your Ryan Gosling space films. What do you think about this?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, First Man is a fucking, or excuse me, it's a phenomenal movie
right now.
I'm sorry. First Man is an excellent film. No, I think it's criminally underrated, and years from now we'll look back and wonder why that film wasn't appreciated as much as it was. As for this project, I like the concept in theory. I'm worried that it's going to be too similar to The Martian. I mean, obviously you'll have a different lead, and like Lord and Miller are directing instead of Ridley Scott, but like from what I've just heard of like the plot and everything, it just feels like Weir is trying to replicate the success of The Martian and sell the rights to the property before the book actually hits shelves and everyone's like, hey, this is just The Martian 2.0. I don't know.
Well,
look,
I'll even add on to that. He did a follow up, Artemis. Not it's not a sequel to The Martian, but he did a book. There was an Audible original called Artemis. And it's one of the very few, I couldn't finish it. I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
And so then that's where I was like, oh man, Lord and Miller doing a space movie with Ryan Gosling, him doing something fun. He does so many serious things, man, him doing another fun thing. Oh man.
Yeah.
This is, and I went, ooh, The Martian was great, but like I did not finish it. And I finish everything.
Yeah.
And so that's a really bad sign. 3C, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because we had a situation because this is cool because we have a proof of concept that this guy's able to create something that would generate well on the big screen with The Martian, Matt Damon. But this time you have different directors attached. I just go back to Gone Girl and Girl on the Train, you know, where you had two pieces of work from the same author, but just translated very differently on the big screen that just did not work at all. Girl on the Train was horrible for me. I couldn't stand. I don't know how you guys feel about that one. But nowhere near as good as Gone Girl, I thought. So I'm curious to see. I love me Gosling. I love me Lord and Miller and what they've done so far. So hope this goes good.
Yeah, Sean, you brought up the good point about Gosling doing the comedy. That's the only thing that gets me excited about it again, because when it comes to him and comedic roles, he's incredibly underrated, and I wish he did more of them.
Yeah, and that's what I like it when actors can have that back and forth. And what was The Nice Guys, his last kind of lighthearted film?
Yeah.
So it was about 5 years ago. So, I mean, I think 4 or 5 years ago. So, you know, I think it's time for him to do something that kind of has that back and forth of like the very serious guy that he normally is. And then let's see that light side. So that's the thing that I'm probably most excited for, especially when it's Lord and Miller that and maybe that's the other one that kind of gets me a little bit like, oh, Lord and Miller. I mean, they've got a really nice track record, except on Star Wars movies. So. And maybe they would have a great track record on Star Wars movies if we ever saw their movie. But
true. That's true.
So I had some super chats come in. One from GTO Spaghetti. Any expectations from Five Nights at Freddy's movie? I actually barely know what Five Nights at Freddy's is. My kids make all the jokes from people, things they hear at elementary school, reference things. But I have no expectations because I don't know anything. 3C, do you know anything about it?
So, yes, I'm familiar with the IP. The video game, surprisingly, I'm not all that fond of. It's the general premise and the idea of the movie is just that mix of like basically a scary Chuck E. Cheese. If you were to walk in and those animatronic puppets came to life and then wanted to attack you, I love that premise. I'm looking forward to the Nicolas Cage version, Wally's Wonderland, where he's going to be at an amusement park and that same thing happens. But this movie has the potential to be really cool. It's been in development hell for the longest time with Blumhouse Studios. It has Christopher Columbus attached to it. He did the first two Harry Potter movies.
Really? So, really? Yeah. Okay. Well, just for that reason, I mean, pixels aside, this has me very interested now.
Yeah, I know, right? And we were talking about this before, Griffin and I, on his live stream, and it could be his comeback. So I am looking forward to it, and there's a huge fan base for it. I just wonder, they announced this thing like almost six years ago, and I'm like, I feel like that audience is just withering down or getting older, so by the time it comes out, will they even care?
Griffin, how about you?
Yeah, I don't really care. I mean, like, it's the idea's got potential, sure, but like, I don't know. I feel like we got a little bit of it with like Krampus. I didn't really like that much. I thought it was okay. Chris Columbus being attached definitely gets me a little bit more intrigued because kind of like what we were talking about on the live stream I did. it could be like a gremlin sort of thing or like a small soldiers sort of thing. Yeah. Like he has that ability within him. So like maybe this is like the comeback film he needs. I'd almost just rather they detach it completely from Five Nights at Freddy's and just do a similar thing in the vein of that. That way they aren't like, you know, kind of chained down by the property, but I don't know. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Okay, going back to the subject of Lord and Miller and Solo. Guy at the movies had a super chat. He said, still waiting on the Solo tell-all from Lord and Miller. I would love to hear that. I mean, I'm always fascinated by it. The Joe Blow channel has a series called WTF, this movie. And they just kind of go through, and that's literally called WTF, the letters. And they just go through these movies with troubled productions. And Solo is one of them. And but, you know, you really don't even have Lord and Miller's take on it yet. They haven't given that interview where they've been like given their side. So, I mean, things that I love to see these alternate takes of movies. And when you have 80% of Solo filmed and then they made like that means that they could make a movie out of that. They could legitimately make a full finished thing, fill in the gaps with Ron Howard footage. I don't know that Disney would ever do that. Whereas, you know, WB's done that like with the Donner cut, but man, that would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to Disney, I don't expect us to get any real tell all sort of story.
Yeah.
Because like I similar to Solo, I'd love to see the tell all of Rise of Skywalker and how that film became a giant mess. But again, it's not going to happen because Disney doesn't want egg on their face. They don't ever want to look like they've made a bad decision. It's the same reason why Song of the South won't get released ever, even though it should be. They're always just trying to sanitize that themselves and their past, and that's the one thing I don't like about a studio like Disney having control over all of these IPs is because, you know, if a situation like this happens, they won't admit to their faults. So we'll probably never get it, sadly.
Yeah. All right. One more super chat and we'll get back to our normal subject at hand. Eddie S says, just rewatched Apocalypto on Prime and still love it. What are your thoughts on the film and Mel Gibson as a director? Through my own embarrassment, I've never seen Apocalypto. As to the second question, as a director, I love Mel Gibson. That makes it just stupid that I haven't seen Apocalypto. It just hasn't happened. But I mean, Braveheart, Hacksaw Ridge, these are just, and I even saw The Man Without a Face and of course Passion in the theater. I just didn't, for whatever reason, I missed Apocalypto because right when it came out was the wrong time. He's one of these guys that because his personal life is just so volatile or turned volatile for about 5 years there, that people forget just how talented of an actor he is, how charismatic of kind of an interview he is, and just an extremely talented director that's very picky with his projects. And so his track record as a director is phenomenal. I just haven't seen it. And I only hear this about it. I hear people like, oh, it was offensive and I hated it. And, oh, it's fantastic. You got to watch Apocalypto. How about you guys?
I absolutely love Apocalypto. Sorry, Griffin.
Go ahead.
I love Apocalypto. I thought it was a great movie. I did see it young where I thought maybe subtitles, the very few that there are in there, but it's very much a visual story. I really like the direction they went with it. I don't see what the offensive stuff could have been. Maybe I need to re-see it again, but I think it's one you'd really dig, Sean, if you got around to seeing it.
It's actually available to watch on Amazon Prime right now, and I'm shocked because the Blu-rays for it are out of print. It's actually one of the rarest Blu-rays to track down. I don't hate it. It's just really difficult to sit through. Like the big thing that comes to mind is that there's a big sacrifice scene in it. And if you're not like familiar with the movie, it takes place in like South America and is dealing with like the Mayans, the Aztec Mayans, one of those ancient civilizations. And it's really brutal. It's really savage and it's unfiltered. And it definitely, Mel Gibson is not Australian, but it has like that dark sort of Australian like filmmaking kind of infused within it. It's a difficult watch, but I think it's a really well made movie. And from a production design standpoint, and through all the actors he casts, it's very you know, authentic to the culture. I think, granted, I haven't read up on the controversies, but I assume it has to do with like how the civilizations were portrayed and like, right. Oh, this isn't exactly really that civilization. Look, I'm just looking for a good story that's relatively in the ballpark of like talking about ancient civilizations. And I think it's good. It's not great. But yeah, that's kind of where I am.
All right, next subject at hand. There's a potential WB release date shuffle. So the big question has been, will Tenet hit its release date? And so then the reports this week were basically, if 80% of theaters are open, then they will release Tenet in July. If not, if the 80% aren't open, they will push Tenet to Wonder Woman's release date, and then they'll push Wonder Woman to Dune's release date. Not a big surprise that they would have some specific benchmark. It has to be at this point in time. And that even that shuffle, that sounds like stuff that we've discussed before. 3C, any surprises there for you?
No, that's not a surprise at all. The thing that I just don't see talked about as much, and maybe I'm just focusing too hard on it, is how long are these social distancing rules in place? Because if it's still the 25% rule, who cares if 100% of the theaters are open? Isn't that still like a big reason to not release your movie yet that you would hope? Could Tenet be the type of film that could make at least its budget back or recover some of its losses with only 25% of people being allowed to capacitate a theater?
So I think that maybe the argument there, though, is normally you have 8 movies at a theater. If you only have one in the theater, so every theater, every screening is half full. It's dull. I mean, it's empty, but every single one of them is filled to that 25% that feels empty. True. But the theater is only people watching that one movie. So that's where it gets interesting when you start doing the math on it, because you go, normally, you're right, exactly. Like, who would be the one that would want to put your movie out? Well, if you're the one to put your movie out, you even say that, like, hey, we've got 8 theaters, they're all playing the same movie. And then it sets a record, it opens on the most screens ever, only 25% capacity, but the most screens ever. I think that's where it gets a little bit interesting because of that.
Then the argument would just be what they do when James Bond, Godzilla vs. Kong, and those movies that start to overlap each other start to do, but it makes sense.
Griffin, any thoughts?
I mean, like, first of all, if it was 80% of the theaters across North America, I think that's that. Then we're talking, oh, okay, this actually might happen. 80% of theaters around the world, that's, I don't know if it's going to make that initial release date. And I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to just do the shift down the line. Tenet's going to move to Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's going to move to Dune, and Dune's going to move into 2021, which is basically what I thought was going to happen since this whole thing started. But I don't know. Nolan's really holding strong onto like releasing this thing. He doesn't want it to budge. And I guess he wants people to like come back and enjoy the theatrical experience. I mean, because he's a big movie theater guy, he's a big proponent of that. He fights for that, and so obviously he wants his movie to get people back into theaters. I think the theater chains are going to love him for it. I just don't know if it's going to happen on June. What is it? 17th? Is that when it is?
I believe there's something about that.
July. Man, so, I don't even know. Especially when California has the lockdown orders extended through July, and then we'll go through another reevaluation period. I don't know. It seems like a long shot.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, that somebody has to take the risk to see what people are going to do. And at the same time, I mean, there's a side to it of just, I mean, that's the one. No matter when they reopen, it's either going to, whenever it happens, it'll feel too soon or way too late. It doesn't feel like there could be any amount of middle room inside of it. You'll either be like, what are they doing putting people in danger? Or you'll be like, why didn't we do this months and months ago? And so there's no safe date. This is uncharted waters. It's all new and different. So, and if there's a movie that's good to test it, because people are going to watch a Nolan movie, whether they end up having to rent it eventually, buy it, whatever, and they have to be creative in how to make up money. There is absolutely demand. People will watch a Nolan movie somewhere, wherever they have to do that. And so I think it's the one it's a great one to test the waters for what's going to happen. But will it hit that July one? If they're saying 80%, that's where you go, man, I don't, at the moment, it doesn't feel like it, especially because California, New York, those are just such two gigantic markets. And those are, for obvious reasons and for good reasons, two of the tighter markets that are more closed down. So we had a super chat come in from Danny K Movies. Have you seen In Bruges or other Michael McDonough movies? And what did you think? I'm not familiar with the director or the film, so unfortunately I have no input on that one. Griffin, have you heard of this one?
Yeah, well, it's Martin McDonough, not Michael McDonough, but he did Three Billboards. He did.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, in Bruges, Seven Psychopaths. I think he's I actually quite enjoy him as a filmmaker. I think he makes interesting films with pretty good scripts, and I think in Bruges is phenomenal. It's probably one of Colin Farrell's best movies ever. So, yeah, great movie.
Yeah, I have to get on that one because I haven't seen. I did see Three Billboards. I wound up loving that movie more than I thought I would with the title like that. Just because I think it's longer than that, isn't it? Three Billboards Outside of Erie, Missouri, or something like that. Real marketable. Yeah. But guy was talented from what I saw on that.
And I haven't even seen Three Billboards. Oh, I was supposed to see it at Fantastic Fest, and it's one of its world premieres, maybe the world premiere. And it was the opening film of the festival. And then there was a lot of scandal. It was right as hashtag Me Too. Oh. And there's some things tied to Fantastic Fest that year. And so then they pulled the movie right beforehand. So there was like no opening movie for the film festival. And so I just happened to miss it because of the timing of when everything happened. So unfortunately I haven't, I have a little bit of that story that I just told you, but that is about it. All right. Next subject. I jumped on Twitter to see that there was a first clip from a movie called Eurovision starring Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams. And I hadn't heard about this one. I didn't know anything about it. And the article just said Will Ferrell goes full Game of Thrones. I was like, what is this? And I click on it, and the clip is him dressed like he's out of Game of Thrones, but it's like a synth pop music video with him and Rachel McAdams doing lead vocals. And apparently it's a Netflix movie that comes out in about a month. And it's about them trying to write the greatest song ever, something like that, kind of a almost Tenacious D type vibe or something. Did you guys happen to catch this bizarre little clip?
Yeah, it was. it was really fun. It's really funny because I had just got an email. Because Dan Stevens is in the movie. Pierce Brosnan is also in the movie. And I got an email about inquiring about Dan Stevens and a bunch of different things potentially for an interview. And then he was like, oh, he's in this thing called Eurovision. And I was like, what the hell is Eurovision?
What is that?
And I looked it up. I see this cast. I see the premise. And then the next day, this clip drops on. I'm like, I don't know what in God's name this is, but I am so in, especially because I love both Will Ferrell, Rachel McAdams, and I wish Rachel McAdams did more comedies. She's amazing in them. Yeah. So I don't know. This looks like weird, bizarre, and it looks like it could be like the next Tiger King of the summer if it's actually good. I don't know.
Yeah. 3C, how about you?
Yeah, I had no idea what it was until I saw your show notes, and so I had to go look into it and stuff. And as soon as you just see Will Ferrell's face in that getup, I just started chuckling the hell out of it, investigating more on what the plot is. It sounds like a lot of fun. But I also agree with Griffin. Sometimes what we think is going to be like the huge blowout thing for Netflix winds up either getting overlooked or people don't dig into it. I wonder if a trailer like this got people excited, or they just thought it was like a weird promotional thing or an actual music video that Will Ferrell's working on, like a Boats and Hoes.
I mean, that's what's so weird about these Netflix ones is Bird Box explodes, goes everywhere. Tiger King explodes, go everywhere. And then, several months back, there's a Paul Rudd TV show where it's two Paul Rudds.
I thought that was
going to
blow up.
Disappeared. It didn't go anywhere. And it's so kind of random which ones kind of catch whatever that magic is that kind of defines or whatever that is that happens with them. And so, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard anything about it. And then they dropped that. And I was like, man, I can't wait to actually show my wife this one because we really enjoy Rachel McAdams, Will Ferrell, of course. And then, Game Night, I think that's the one where you're like, well, she can be really funny. Hope she does a lot more of this. And then you see her in this and she's playing it dead serious as she's singing this ridiculous Volcano Man song on a mountain.
Yeah.
So I'm on board to check this one out. All right. Next subject. It seems like every week we're getting new season two of Mandalorian casting information. I thought it had been shot. That had been like that's what they'd been saying, is that they'd already shot it. And then suddenly all of these rumors that are like massive casting things. This one is Timothy Oliphant joining season two. And I love Timothy Oliphant. I mean, he can be funny. He can be the action guy. He did the show Justified, that really cool show that you can see easily how he would transition to the Mandalorian. Justified is kind of like a modern day Western, and Mandalorian is Western in Star Wars world. So it's just real obvious how he could transition over. I had someone mention like, "Oh, do you think maybe he could playing Boba Fett?" I was like, no, you're getting your Star Wars mythology confused. The actor that is the clone that is Boba Fett has been cast. So it's an actor playing Boba Fett. It's the actor that is the clone based off of, not Timothy Olyphant. 3C, did you watch The Mandalorian? What's your take on The Mandalorian? What do you think about all this casting?
Yeah, so I'm never always the biggest Star Wars fan. I just missed it as a kid, but I did watch Mandalorian, and I watch all the mainstream movies that go to theaters. I absolutely love this actor, bringing it back to Scream. I loved his little performance at the end of that movie.
Speaking of Scream, he's in Scream 2. That's probably that's the first thing I ever saw him in was Scream 2.
Yeah, and I saw parts of Justified, and I never got completely into the show, but the man is built. He has that range where he can definitely fit in. They didn't say whether we would just see his face or if they would throw him in a get-up suit. Did they talk about how large his role was in The Mandalorian this time, or just that he's set to appear?
That's what they're kind of doing all of these, is they're just making these kind of vague announcements of who's going to be there, but not letting us know how much, while I play with my toys and make noise in the background. No, you're
fine. So I wonder if like kind of the Mandalorian or Star Wars will be that thing where just like every notable actor will get a turn to swap in or just have a little appearance to be like, I was a Star Wars character, almost like the MCU is just bringing in as many people, whether it's large roles, small roles, cameo roles. So it'd be nice to see if he gets a large role because he deserves it.
Yeah. Griffin, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, Timothy Oliphant is an excellent actor. It's actually really funny because I watched the first two Screams like a couple of nights ago, and then I remember seeing him in Scream 2, and I'm like, oh gosh, he's in here. And then also I was like, before that I was watching The Office, and he plays
I shared it on Instagram, the graphic. He's gonna be in Mandalorian season 2, and I had like 10 people message me, the guy from The Office. But he's done a lot more than that.
It's hilarious that people like just know him as Danny Cordray, like just this small little role.
I had to stop and think about it. It's like from The Office, like, oh yeah, he is in there. He's from the seasons that I don't really watch. So like I know that he's on the show, and I had to stop and think, what is his plot line? But to that group of people people rewatch and they love The Office.
Yeah,
and if you're not kind of older and would have watched some of these movies he's been in, or he was in a Die Hard movie, a Scream movie over 20 years ago, if you hadn't watched Justified, then suddenly, oh yeah, he was in The Office.
Yeah.
True. But anyway, on the Mandalorian casting, I absolutely love the way they cast this show. And it almost feels like targeted for me, like Carl Weathers. Most people aren't like, let's get Apollo Creed. Let's get the guy from Predator. But like, to me, that's casting I get so excited about. Even like Gina Carano, I watched her in American Gladiators and over 10 years ago. That was like an early thing we did in our marriage, was watch the revival of American Gladiators. And she was one of the gladiators on there. And then, of course, she's become, an actress over the last 10 years. And so things like that, I just love these casts. They keep getting these people that are all just really interesting ones. We had a super chat come in about 10 minutes ago from Max saying, who will be the defining three directors of the 2020s? Who do we think are going to be those defining directors of this next decade? That's a tough one, because there's defining based off of blockbusters, and then there's defining based off of prestige, and they're not always the same. And like, you think like Denis Villeneuve, if Dune is finally his breakout one, that's a hit with the masses, he's in that, he's immediately there, he's one of them. But he's a prestige no matter what. But is he going to be the mainstream guy? I don't know. He hasn't, he does the ones that film lovers love, but will he have his big hit one? I don't know. Who are some of those ones you think could be the up and coming? Like, you think like the Russos, or you think like 2010s in the year 20, like who did some of these big massive films, Joss Whedon and the Russos for these Marvel movies. And in the year 2010, you wouldn't have guessed them as at all. Like, wait, the guys that are working on Community? What are you talking about? When, yeah. How would they become the? And that's what makes it so tricky is that the breakouts are Lord and Miller. You wouldn't have said Lord and Miller is some of the more interesting directors of this last decade. And then they turned into that. So any guesses, 3C?
I'll throw in James Mangold just because he might hit that stride both of a big movie if Indiana Jones ever comes to fruition, the fifth one that he's working happens. On. But I mean, he's also proven in more a prestige way. He's got that talent with Ford v Ferrari. That was a movie that I thought was really well done. Denis Villeneuve, if Dune takes off like it deserves to, the man needs to catch a break. If not, he's going to be stuck to small indie movies, and I doubt they'll ever give him a big budget again. Other than that, I mean, I'll just throw in like a Jordan Peele, just because he's only had two movies, yep. And I think this whole decade he'll have a couple more, and hopefully they're up to the caliber of Get Out than more divisive like Us was to some people.
Griffin, who are some of your guesses on that one?
I think you have to look at the people who were starting to really break out in the latter years of the 2010s. So yeah. I think someone like Jordan Peele is going to be massive in the 2020s. Yeah. I think that, Villeneuve for sure. I mean, again, he's already well regarded and well respected in the film community, but it could bring him to that level of mainstream popularity. Someone who's just like super, super hot right now that I think is only going to explode even more is Taika Waititi. I mean,
he's lining just, stuff up and he's doing the back and forth, hit, small, smart.
Yeah. And especially with, exactly. Yeah. Especially with like one of his next films being a Star Wars movie. It's just going to only go up from there. Yeah, those are the two that I can think of. I mean, obviously, Christopher Nolan is a beloved filmmaker, and he has been for the past two decades. Like, people love this guy and what he does. But I think the 2020s just offers him another opportunity to it gives Nolan the opportunity to officially become like one of the great directors in cinematic history. I mean, I would already consider him to be one, but like if Tenet's a massive success, if his next film is like another massive success, if he wins that Best Director Oscar, he gets another nomination, or he wins Best Picture, it'll catapult him to the next level. So it's also a great opportunity for filmmakers like him who are in that, area.
Yeah.
So we had some super chats come in. I'll try and hit these real quick. Azim said, you missed one of my super chats up top. I'm not sure if that's true. Mm-hmm. I'll check to see if I missed it. Then we had Last Thumb RR say, do you like Tigger movie? I don't think I've ever seen the Tigger movie. I've seen a lot of the other Winnie the Pooh movies. I haven't specifically seen Tigger. 3C, have you seen Tigger?
No, I have not. Sorry.
And how about you, Griffin?
A long time ago. I actually think I saw it in theaters, but genuinely could not tell you a single thing about it. I don't really remember it.
Yeah, so unfortunately, we don't have something more satisfying on that one. Here's the question I missed. This was from Azim with Super Chat. Thank you so much. This sort of ties to my previous question. I heard Jurassic World is getting a live action series after Dominion comes out. What do you think they could do with that? So I personally haven't heard that as of yet, that they're doing a Jurassic Park series. I would struggle to know how they could do that because of the sheer budget of trying to do a movie of that scale. Yeah. Dinosaurs. They did this show Terra Nova back 10 years ago, massive budget, but it did decent numbers, but to be successful with something that's sci-fi heavy and special effects heavy, it's just very difficult to do. And it's tough to know, like, what would I want to see a TV series following up Dominion when I haven't seen Dominion. So it's tough to say for that reason. 3C, would you be interested in a Jurassic World live action TV series? Or, I mean, I'd be interested. I would absolutely check it out, but I just need information. Any thoughts?
Same. Yeah. It's been a long rumored thing in the Jurassic Park community that they're working on something like that. If they did, I would think maybe the premise of Dominion would be, just following what a daily life looks like of going to work and seeing dinosaurs on your way to work or something like that. I would have to imagine they do it mostly animatronic based. Who knows what CGI budget is like that. It would work as being with Universal, it's kind of hard because is this something they want to put on their Peacock network or is this something they actually want to put on TV? I'd be all up down for it, but I just think the financial problem is what would hit that because that sounds like an expensive show.
Yeah, I guess, but at the same time, I guess to even kind of counter what we're saying, I mean, we're in this era where we've got The Mandalorian that's on a streaming service and you know, obviously the production value of things like Game of Thrones. So it's, I mean, maybe we're getting there to where they just make it their prestige show for, that's how they drive people over to their streaming service. Because you think, what property do they have that you can use to really get people to actually sign up? Yeah. You know, Disney uses Star Wars, Universal uses Jurassic Park, Jurassic World. So maybe, Griffin, any thoughts?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, man. I guess there is potential there for like something interesting, but I'm not like jumping out of my chair to see it. I think I have a little, weirdly enough, as much as I love Fallen Kingdom and I'm one of the few defenders of that film, I'm a little burnt out of Jurassic Park, if I'm being honest, just because it is sort of like the same thing, rinse and repeat all over again, which is, I think that's why I liked Fallen Kingdom a little bit more than most people, because it was something different, even if it was colossally stupid, which it is undoubtedly. But yeah, I guess if they're playing into the whole thing where it's like, you know, like Planet of the Apes, but with dinos, there is, you know, possibility for something interesting. But I feel like that fits better within the confines of a film. I don't need to see like the day to day lives of someone like interacting with a dino on their way to work or something like that. Like that, then you get into like the realm of like this potentially being a little bit of a parody. But I don't know if either of you have seen this show, but like it could kind of turn into something like this. Did either of you guys watch Terra Nova?
I just referenced it. I only watched about five episodes. I referenced it just a moment ago, but
I know, but anyways, it's I feel like it could kind of be like that, but I don't
didn't
know.
Even get into it. Maybe that's my problem. Is like, to your kind of point of like, part of the appeal of a Jurassic Park movie is the dinosaurs got out. That's a movie. Yeah. That's a great movie. How do you make that 10 hours long, 13 hours long? And I think that's where you kind of lose some of the momentum, and certain stories just lend themselves really well to the urgency, the speed, the pacing of a movie rather than a TV show.
Right. You know? And like with Terra Nova, the big thing about that, it wasn't even about the dinosaurs. It was like this civilization. Like these colonists that had to go back survivors. And like learn how to survive in the old world because the new world was dead. That's an interesting concept. That's not really the case here if you do like a Jurassic World TV show. So I don't know if it could necessarily work.
Now, hear me out on this one. I think I've got a concept that could really, really draw people in. Joe Exotic gets out of jail he runs a bootleg dinosaur and becomes the dinosaur king. So it's like one part Jurassic World, one part Joe Exotic. And and so it's just his continuing adventures. This is worth letting him out of jail for, you know, hiring an assassin, to make this a reality. I think we all want to see Joe Exotic Dinosaur King as part of the Jurassic World, family. So, all right, we'll get one more super chat and then we'll go into our big discussion of Scoob. Where did that? Almost had it and then it jumped on me. Edgar World says, thank you for the super chat. A live action Star Wars movie by Filoni, yes or no? Dave Filoni is the guy that was kind of the creative force behind the Clone Wars, and then he's a big part of The Mandalorian. And so Star Wars people have been talking about, or Clone Wars fans have been talking about, this guy needs to do a Star Wars live action movie. Would I want to see that? I mean, I think absolutely he's earned the right for them to take the chance on him doing that, or giving him his own live action TV show. Either one, I could go either way. And I don't view one as like better or more prestigious than the other, because, you know, Mandalorian, I like that more than the sequel trilogy. I could go either way, but I'm absolutely give him something live action. 3C, do you have any Dave Filoni thoughts as the non-Star Wars guy, the batch?
No, I'm to me, it's just always step out of the circle of what is the norm for Star Wars and doing something different. People seem to really take Filoni's take on the world as faithful and nice, but I'm just giving cool stories that get a non-Star Wars fan interested, and I'll be there.
Griffin, I know you have an opinion on this one. How about you?
Yeah, if you give him like a story credit and like he's the producer, but not necessarily the director, or even if he co-directs it, then I'm more interested than if it's just solely him directing. Because again, you bring up the point, his episodes of The Mandalorian were the weakest. And I think before he tackles a feature film from as a director, he should probably hone the craft of live action filmmaking a little bit more. There was some good stuff in there, but it definitely felt like an animation director directing live action, and it didn't really translate. So if he's given a producer credit, if he's given a story by credit, and he's heavily involved in the story, absolutely. But someone else would have to direct it for me to really be like, okay, yes, he should do it.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that, you know, people that love Clone Wars, they love him. And so, but y'all have to think on that other level of, has he actually directed a movie before? And that's a skill set. Being able to work with, be a showrunner and work with a team of people is not the same skill set as directing on set with live action humans. And so I think that's what some people, I think, need to factor into some of that. All right, moving along to our big discussion of the day. And that is the movie Scoop came out this weekend. Just in case anyone hasn't seen it, let's not go into too many spoilers, but we can talk about the general concept of it. I don't even know there's not that many actual spoilers for it. So if each of us can kind of go through and give our quick take on the movie and then talk about what we liked about the general direction that took things and where obviously they're going with all this. So my quick take on it was I was really disappointed. I liked the origin, the tone, the vibe. But then once it kicked into the actual story and it became clear this wasn't a Scooby-Doo mystery, but it was a Hanna-Barbera shared universe treasure hunting adventure, I wish that they hadn't gone in that direction. I thought that was as a starter movie for what they're trying to do. I think it would have worked better to start off, just do a classic Scooby-Doo story, tell and build to this, because it feels like you gave this great new style of animation, new cast. I want to see them do just the normal before we do the weird. That was kind of my take. 3C, what was your quick impression of Scoob?
I started off as disappointed, like you, after I saw it, I was bummed. And now every day that's gone by where I still think about the movie and the decisions that they made and just describing it to people who haven't seen it, trying to think into spoilers, I'm getting like angry with what they did with it. I was very let down as a big Scooby-Doo fan. I wish they would have focused more on the characters. I didn't mind the Hanna-Barbera universe implications. I just wish it wasn't, they didn't feel so forced, along with a lot of the pop culture references and really trying to modernize it and just straying away from what the formula of Scooby-Doo is. I mean, it's come a long way of just a couple of kids solving a mystery, unmasking people, and now UFOs, flying ships, hidden islands with cavemen. It's just, I was really let down by it.
Griffin, where did you land on this one?
I was actually pretty positive on it, and maybe it's because I just really wasn't expecting much from it. I assume that this is basically what we were going to get when they said they were going to do an animated Scooby-Doo movie, like a theatrical film. Like it's a film that assumes you know Scooby-Doo inside and out, and it gives you a little little doggy treats or Scooby snacks at the beginning. It's like, oh, here's the origin of Mystery Inc. But we all know the story of what they do and how they are why they're a team and all this stuff like that. So it's like when you take that into account, the idea of a grand like cinematic spectacle, like this giant adventure where they're like kind of chasing down like a MacGuffin and whatnot, that doesn't necessarily bother me. And I think what I liked about it was that the Hanna-Barbera characters, they felt integrated naturally. Like Blue Falcon's story arc kind of coincided with Shaggy's story arc, and they both kind of learned from each other. Dick Dastardly was an interesting villain for some of the movie. I think his motivations got a little bit lost along the way, but I love the vocal performance from Jason Isaacs. Yeah, like there's my big issue with it is that I'm not a big fan of where like children's animated movies are going nowadays that aren't from Disney or Pixar. There's a lot of just like really cringeworthy tropes of trying to make it hip and modern, just humor that doesn't land, really bizarre and outdated cameos in this film specifically. and so it's like when you take that into account with like all the good stuff, yeah, it does bring it down a notch, but like, I don't know, man, like it's fun. Kids are going to love it. The vocal performances are entertaining. I do wish that we got more of that group dynamic, even though it is kind of assuming that you've seen Scooby-Doo iterations before. It's like I wanted to see this movie because I wanted to watch Mystery Inc. work together to solve a mystery. And that was the big kind of letdown for me, is that they don't really, and there isn't really a mystery to be solved, but it's got a lot of heart and it's sweet and charming. And I don't know. I wouldn't mind rewatching it. It's fine.
Yeah. I was really along for the ride for the first 20 minutes. And I didn't even mind some of the weird cameos and pop culture references. Like, okay, you brought in this reality TV star. That's a weird reference for
so
this movie.
Weird.
This
year.
All the people to pick. This is you are making me laugh, but my kids definitely don't catch this reference.
Yep.
But I was tracking along with it, and then as soon as it gets swept up, Blue Falcon shows up. It just the analogy that I used in my review. It's a little bit like if they decided to call a movie Spider-Man, but it's actually Infinity War as your like starting point. Like, here's Spidey, and instead of him being in New York as this high schooler, he's off in space battling Thanos, and you go, okay, he's not mischaracterized, but it's like this is not a Spider-Man story. This is like this shared universe Avengers movie with him in it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so if you call that Spidey or Spider-Man, that would be weird. Call it Avengers. Yeah. It's okay. And you built to it, as opposed to here where it's like, oh, we're going to do Scoob. We're actually finally going to do a big budget CGI Scooby-Doo movie. Oh, awesome. Cool. Man, we'll get to see the gang all working together, solving a mystery for the first 15 minutes. And then it turns into every other kind of CGI blockbuster that we get these. Like, they traded out the tropes of Scooby-Doo mysteries for the tropes of Marvel movies. I mean, like without going into too many details, like they even have the heroic sacrifice in the finale where you're like, wait, are they really doing this? Like in a Scooby-Doo movie? This absolutely works for me when it's in my comic book movies. It's just odd to put it here. And so I just thought that was of all the places to start. Like if they built to this movie, as opposed to like you mentioned, like the assumed that we have knowledge of the characters, and to an extent, like you can follow it. You're not confused by the movie, but you're going, I want to see classic Scooby-Doo first. I want let's do the normal before we do the weird. And that's to me where it just lost me pretty quickly, unfortunately. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess like I understand what they were trying to do. They were basically trying to do the Lego movie, but with like a Hanna-Barbera universe. And like, sure, maybe if they called it like Scooby-Doo and the, intergalactic like adventure or something like a horrible title. But like if it was Scooby-Doo.
I love that title. It's right up there with that name for that Sony cinematic universe.
Scooby-Doo in the intergalactic Hanna-Barbera universe. If all they had to do was retitle it and call it Scooby-Doo and blank. I understand why they didn't, because they think they were trying to separate it from the straight to VOD Scooby-Doo movies. And so it's like by just calling it Scoob, like it's hinting at the origins, but then also like it's just kind of like a riff on the Scooby-Doo name. I don't know. But like I get what you're saying. There are a lot of tropes in this movie that are not specific to Scooby-Doo, and then they try and like shoehorn in Scooby-Doo tropes where they don't necessarily fit. I don't know. I think at the end of the day, it really just comes down to the fact it's like, did you just have fun watching whatever you just watched? And if you didn't, I get it. If you did, I also get it. So I am curious, did your kids enjoy it?
So I asked them, hey, what's your favorite? Because we watched the two live action movies and then this one all in the span of 5 days. My daughter, this was her favorite. My daughter really dug it. My son liked one of the live action movies more. So, and he didn't give a specific reason as to why, but you know, both my wife and I were
places.
Both the wife and I were a little bit like, that was kind of an odd direction to take that. I don't understand why they, of all the things to do, why would you do it like this? Also say that I wasn't crazy about the voice work. Maybe it's just because you're just so used to,
yeah,
or so used to the previous versions that when you have like Will Forte trying to do this other person's voice, it's just like, why didn't we just get Matthew Lillard? That was like, I just don't understand what you were going for with some of this. Is that was kind of odd to me as well. But 3C, what do you think about, like, are you excited for potential future movies in this universe, or you're just kind of burned right off the
bat? Really?
I'm really not. I'm done with this version of Scooby-Doo. I think, who knows how the VOD numbers will show. Like, I had this conversation with Griff the other day where it's like, I think VOD numbers should be possibly made public just to see an understanding, because we have box office numbers that are public, but VOD numbers are very hidden, and they'll only say if it did good. If we don't hear anything, if we don't get an estimate about how much it did, we can assume it probably did on par with Trolls, or it just did okay. And
I would assume this thing's going to kill Trolls.
I would hope so.
Blow it out of the water.
Because I would think this IP is bigger.
Like Friday at midnight, everyone was staying, or not even, well, midnight Eastern time, but everyone was staying up to watch Scoob, like everyone and their kids. Like, I think it killed it over the weekend.
So we'll see if it does get a sequel. If it does, I hope they learn their lessons and they listen to what other people are saying about focusing more on the mystery. And then I wouldn't mind a Blue Falcon spinoff. I would so watch that, see what else they do with the Hanna-Barbera characters. But if they do continue on, I would hope it's just focused on the mystery gang.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's like Dick Dastardly, I dug the way they did him. He was fun. Blue Falcon, I didn't have any problems with Marky Mark or the character. But when you call it Scoob and you set, like, the first 15 minutes, you set it up as, hey, look, it's classic Scooby-Doo. And then suddenly we're in a spaceship flying all around picking up relics. It's just like, this isn't what I wanted. And I had some people in my comments of my review being like, oh, another review that just hated it because they tried to be creative and original. It's like, I don't think that's analysis, because like, creative and original normally means that you're creative and original. Pop culture references, not original for these types of movies. Big epic treasure hunting, not original for these times. Heroic sacrifice, not original. There's a sky beam in it. There's a literal sky beam straight out of every comic book movie third act. And so, I think that there's a lot of, you know, people that want to be like, if you had fun with it, I'm totally fine with that. And I like that my daughter liked it. That of course says something. But if you're like people that are trying to explain away why other people didn't like, oh, they just did something new with it. Like, what? I wanted a Scooby-Doo mystery out of a Scooby-Doo. Like, that's not me being picky. Yeah, that's not me being a purist. That's a normal expectation from a Scooby-Doo movie. And they rolled the dice. They knew all of this. They rolled the dice that, hey, let's try something different and see how people respond to it. Some people are loving it, and naturally some people won't. And I think that's just a pretty fair take.
Yeah.
All right. We missed a couple subjects, and we had a couple super chat come in. So we missed talking about Furiosa and Fred Willard. And then we'll, if you guys can stick around, we'll take some, 10, 15 minutes of just kind of Q&A from the chat. But Azeem, the Dream Reviewer, says, have you all noticed that reboots make us love old films more in franchises? For example, the Amazing Spider-Man films make us like Spider-Man 3 more. Also, thoughts on Spider-Man PS4. I think that anytime you do a remake, it calls to mind the original. It calls to mind comparisons.
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, I never had the thought like, oh man, Spider-Man 3 is actually really good because the Amazing Spider-Man came out. Like, I never thought that.
I thought the opposite.
I saw The Amazing Spider-Man. I went, this is a pretty good little film. Not the most memorable, but it's pretty good. I had my frustrations with the second one, but I think I tend to think of you that I'm able to compartmentalize them pretty well. And maybe sometimes they negatively compare, like the reboot of Total Recall and the reboot of a remake of RoboCop made me go, oh, man, Paul Verhoeven really does have a distinct flavor. His movies have such a distinct style that I don't have in and of themselves these big nitpicks of RoboCop and Total Recall, but they're just bland by comparison. And so I think that sometimes stuff like that happens. But and as for Spider-Man PlayStation 4, I have a review of it on my channel. It's one of the video games I've reviewed, one of the first video games I ever reviewed. I think it's great. It's a phenomenal game and a great little Spider-Man story. It's so, and it's fun to play it with my kids. Be like, this is actual city. Here's New York City. 3C, how about you? Remakes, reboots.
I'm always on the camp of go ahead and do them all. I'm looking forward to see what they do with the Scarface remake that they're working on now. My thing is just never try to replicate what came before, you know, like the argument or the question that we get sometimes in Griffin's channel is the Back to the Future. And I would absolutely love to see that world again in a reboot or remake, as long as it just doesn't copy exactly what the Michael J. Fox movies did and just create characters of those same people. And also on that comment of Spider-Man 3 and the Amazing Spider-Man, the first two Amazing Spider-Mans were much better than Spider-Man 3.
Griffin, how about you?
I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. I think that kind of similar to what you were saying, Sean, is like if a reboot is really bad, it makes you notice things about the original that maybe you might not have before. Like not really necessarily a one-for-one comparison because it's a film that has many sequels, but like Shane Black's The Predator made me go back and appreciate Robert Rodriguez's vision even more for Predators.
Absolutely.
or John McTiernan, what he did in the original one, just like a million times more. And I already love that movie. So I think I agree. I think it can have that effect, but I don't know. I'm not necessarily a big reboot fan unless it's of a property that I think you can do something interesting. I'm going to, you know, continue to point to this forever now, but like The Invisible Man, that's a movie that did it right. Took the essence of that original film and that character, but it made something completely new and different to the point where both of those versions of The Invisible Man can exist on the same like plane and are equally as good for two different reasons. That's what I expect out of my reboots. I also go back to Suspiria. Dario Argento's Suspiria and Luca Guadagnino's Suspiria are two incredibly different movies. One is almost like the antithesis to the other, and so it's like they can both exist and I can appreciate both of them for doing different things. So if you're gonna reboot it, do it that way. As for The Amazing Spider-Man, I love both of those movies. Mark Webb is amazing, and Spider-Man 3 is just not good. So that I'll leave it at that.
All right, going back to subject, I had in the show notes, Fred Willard, an actor, passed away a couple days ago. He's enormous body of work, just known for kind of his straight face sense of humor in kind of these side roles. The one that stands out to me is This Is Spinal Tap and kind of all of those mockumentaries from Christopher Guest. I believe he was also the president in WALL-E. I think he was on Modern Family. He's been in a ton of stuff. Just wanted to mention the fact that he passed away a couple days ago. Did you guys have any specific memories of him?
I wish I could say I appreciated more of his work. He was one of those, like, when I did see the name, I couldn't put the face to it. But then you see his face and you definitely
remember him.
Yeah, you know he's in something. And the fact also, I was in the middle of watching WALL-E because it was on TV when the news broke out. So it was kind of just sad to be like, oh, man, I'm watching this movie and the man literally just passed away. So it's really sad, of course. And he has his fans like you, of course, Sean. I just wish I could have appreciated his work more.
Griffin, how about you?
Yeah, for sure. I thought he was a comedic genius. I loved his stuff. I mean, obviously an Anchorman, I think, is excellent. He's great in there. And he's really just got like a diverse body of work with a lot of great comedic roles across different mediums. And it's really sad for sure. The other person who passed away literally the same day was Lynn Shelton.
Yes.
Who was like Mark Maron's wife, right? Or her, or his partner, or some someone like that.
I wasn't as familiar with.
I mean, she was massive in the indie sphere. She did Little Fires Everywhere and Sword of Trust and stuff. And she's another one who was just gone way, way, way too soon. So that's just really, really sad to see that.
So I missed the second thing on my notes, actually talking about the Mad Max spinoff Furiosa. Mm. And if you guys want to start throwing questions in the super chat, we'll close out the audio version in just a couple of minutes. And so if you guys have questions, throw them in the comments, send super chats if you want us to answer them. But final kind of topic of the day for the audio version is that we got once again them affirming that they're working on this Furiosa spinoff that's an origin story, confirmed Charlize Theron not in it, and that another person in contention for it is Jodie Comer. I'm not familiar with who that is. The other person that they discussed with Anya Taylor-Joy. Griffin, any thoughts on Furiosa, a spinoff movie, as well as the casting?
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about this when John Flickinger was on the show. So if you want to hear like more in-depth conversation, definitely check out that episode. But I'm for it. I think there's potential in it. It's not necessarily the Mad Max film I want to see next, but if George Miller is really passionate about it and he wants to bring this story to the big screen and tell a different story with a different lead character in the Wasteland universe, 100% for it. As for the two people in the lead for casting, Anya Taylor-Joy is literally one of the best up and coming actresses working today. So that excites me like to the millionth power. And then Jodie Comer, I think, is also a really great up and coming talent. And if we're just talking about looks, they both look the part too. Yeah, so yeah. I could buy into each of them playing a young Charlize Theron. So I'm all for this, very excited, and I like the two front runners they have. So, yes.
All right, 3C, how about you? Do you think that either Jodie Comer or Anya Taylor-Joy are committed enough to the role to cut off their arm?
No, but I think they'd be committed enough to wear a green sleeve for about 6 months. Oh,
that's right. Technology, I forgot. I was hoping they went full method.
Yeah, I would like Anya Taylor-Joy over the other one just because I'm familiar with her work. I really dig what she's doing. As far as the actual film goes, yeah, I'm not crazy about it being centered on Furiosa. I think the part I'm most excited for with this spinoff is to see the world, is to see the different communities, explore how this world works when you have water as a currency or people really are after milk. You know, I just want to see this apocalyptic world more. And if it's through the eyes of Furiosa, then I'm all up for it.
I'm interested in the timeline of this too, because the original Mad Max film, you see the world falling apart a little bit. There's still some civilization in the first movie, and then all the other ones have been post-civilization, and kind of these tribes have formed rather than civilization as we know it. And so I'm even wondering if there's a little bit in, you know, obviously they've done a shifting timeline with all of these movies with, you know, Tom Hardy replacing Mel Gibson, but there's the potential that you could also get a little bit more of that information about how society fell when the oil shut down and everything like that. So that's another one that I'm kind of interested to see how all of that plays out. But, you know, if I were to pick what Mad Max movie would I make, I would just make another Mad Max. That would be my preference, especially when you've got George Miller being 1,000 years old and he's not quick to put out new movies. That means whatever this is, it could be his last. You always have to be thinking at his age, this could be his last or likely his last. Sure. But it's not the one I would have picked for him to do. But at the same time, I don't hate the idea. I think there's some interesting stuff inside of it. Well, that'll close out the audio version. If you're here live in the stream, we're going to keep going. So be sure to throw your questions in. 3C, where can we find you on the internet?
You guys can find me at youtube.com/3cfilms or on Twitter at 3cfilmreview. Really a pleasure to be on with you guys. And I'm excited to do some more questions.
Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me over on the FilmSpeak channel for other movie reviews, live streams, and a whole bunch of amazing content. Then you can find me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
And if you're listening to the audio version of this, these are streamed live to my YouTube channel. I do announce when we'll be recording them in advance. If you want to chime in, throw some comments in, be a part of the live experience, just follow me on all social media, Instagram, Twitter. Links are down below in the description on this. You can find out where all those are at. You can also find links to their channels down below. And keep talking movies and nerdy stuff too much.